Welcome to The Constellations, talks across art, technology and science. Produced by Deluxe Media Arts and Canvas, Art and Ideas on FBI Radio. Join us for encounters with experimental art projects and their makers. Welcome to The Constellations. This recording is taking place on Gadigal land in front of a live audience at 107 in Redfern, Sydney. I'm your host, Beck Dean. The Constellations invites artists and scientists to talk about work that they've made together so we can understand the situations and ideas that drive people in different disciplines to combine their creative forces. Today we're joined by artist and postdoctoral fellow at the University of New South Wales, Baden Palethorpe. Welcome, Baden.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Aaron Coutts, a professor in sport and exercise science at the University of Technology in Sydney. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, Beck.
And we're going to be talking about a project that Baden presented at the UTS Gallery earlier this year called Clangor, which engages with data gathered from athlete performance and the crowds of sports fans watching them perform. So I think I might start with you, Baden. Mm-hmm. You're an artist working predominantly in the digital computer-generated realm of art practice, focusing on aestheticising and rendering some quite menacing aspects of our culture, you know, like high-grade military technology and weaponry. Can you tell us a bit about this work and your background as an artist?
Sure. So I guess like similar to many people who were born in the 80s, so I grew up with the birth of computer games and, you know, popular culture in that way around technology, I guess. So playing with games and having a father as a computer scientist who had a visualization laboratory, I was always hanging around computers, playing with computers and all that kind of thing. So that had a big influence on, you know, the way I see the world. And I've always had an interest in technology because of that. And very quickly you get into the history of a lot of technology having come from the military, like the internet, like GPS, like screens, like all these things that we use to navigate our daily lives, but also the way that we construct our identities and present our identities through the internet, through social media, etc. But also trying to understand how they might be used for other purposes or how they might be used to critically examine those routes. You know, it's quite interesting, like until recently, GPS was purposefully made inaccurate. So that it, when it was available for civilian use, I think it was about 50 meters was the closest radius you'd actually get because the US military was worried that it would be used for targeting by...
Is this still the case?
No, it's not the case anymore. This is many years ago now, but now it's used, obviously, the more precise it is, the better because it's used for tracking all of us in so many ways to deliver really specifically targeted advertising, you know, giving us good driving directions and even other like quite useful things like determining traffic flows. But also, it's important to remember the historical conditions under which it emerged, I guess.
It's hard to think of many things that haven't been progressed through military action. Medicine is one of them, and even canned food and preserving food, all of these things have these lines back to, you know, supporting thousands and thousands of people in the deployment of war. It's kind of a really kind of scary space once you start thinking about it.
Definitely.
One of the things that I'm really interested in with your work is how you situate these, you know, sort of military objects and individuals, figures within these quite seemingly, these very polished figures, but within very benign backgrounds, which kind of serve to make them more menacing.
Yeah. And I guess like these objects themselves have a very particular aesthetic and there's a real like fetishization of weaponry. And, you know, it's no accident that weapons or, you know, technologies that are used to kill, I guess, have this kind of weird allure about them. And the futurists were obsessed with speed and violence. And, you know, there's a long history of artists looking at the aesthetics of war, you know, through the First World War, the Second World War, and those kinds of very intense historical and technological contexts. But in my work, I guess, the aims is to kind of create that unsettling feeling in the viewer that is at once, you know, like these are dazzling, very seductive objects, but you know within that seduction is that is this kind of like death drive or something, as you say, more sinister. And I guess it's just using those aesthetic devices as a way to kind of critique them in a sense. So that,
yeah, it's like they sit really uneasily on the edges of sort of propaganda and advertising this sort of glorious future and annihilation.
Yeah,
like at the same time.
Totally. And you know, militaries have gotten really good at branding. And it's like, you know, like psychological operations or psyops is like, it's been around for a long time. And, you know, there's lots of weaponry that is aesthetic. It's, you know, there's sonic warfare. There's, you know, since like the story of Jericho, like in the Bible where there was trumpets and sound. And even before that, obviously in a non-Western context, sound has been used as a tool of fear, I guess, for a long time. And, you know, that links straight back into sporting stadiums and the way that crowds chant together to create these sort of fairly benign yet still, you know, warlike environments for players who are, you know, engaging in a form of combat.
So this is a lovely segue into asking Aaron about his engagement with this project. So I guess where you guys are coming together is in this kind of space of data and from the sort of data gatherer and the use of data in sport to the use of this data in art. So Aaron, you're looking at developing evidence-based methods for improving athlete performance. Can you tell us a bit about the background of your research and where data and stats fit into this?
Yeah, well, you know, I call myself a sports nerd. You know, I'm a researcher in sport. I've spent the last 20 years trying to measure and quantify athletes, what they do, to understand and optimize their training, so how they can train better, and also to optimize their performance or understand their performance so we can give information to coaches, to athletes, and how to do better fundamentally.
So were you working originally from video and other methods of capture to then moving into working with GPS data?
My first ever project I ever published was an undergraduate project where I filmed AFL umpires with my video camera from home, and I filmed it. I sat on top of the Brisbane cricket ground, or the Gabba, and I followed them in matches, so one person solo on a camera. And then from markings on the field and a stopwatch, I went back and replayed it. I remember replaying it. It took me weeks to do one game to estimate speeds and distances that umpires were doing. This is my first foray into science and measurement, and so one umpire, one game took me at least a week to do. And
that's
now
the analog method.
The analog, hardcore, old school method. And now, from what we do, we're measuring them at 100 times a second in some senses, every player on the field in real time. And it's this GPS technology that we used in the project started from a CSIRO project in a collaboration with the Australian Institute of Sport. And we had no idea what we're doing for a start. We're just measuring stuff, right? And then we start as a scientist classifying and using the movement patterns, how they move, when they move, to understand performance, but also how much they move to risk of injury.
So what does this actually look like? What are they wearing or are connected to that is gathering this data?
They're getting much smaller technology now. It's getting less and less pervasive. If anyone watches professional sport, look between the shoulder blades of the players, and they can wear these little wearable devices tucked into pouches or into vests. They either wear as vests, and all sports outdoors use GPS.
And so on a kind of day-to-day with your data, are you looking at things after the game or are you there during it?
All the time. We're looking at data all the time. So we look at data, for example, let's take the athlete's life. Training is where they spend most of their time. We look at what they're doing during training. Are they meeting what we expect them to do? We now know what we expect them to do in training because we have all this data of what they've done before. And we now have some understanding of how much you do relates to injury. So if you do too much, get injured. And we can quantify all this where historically that was difficult to do. So that's training. And then it gets more interesting. We start comparing between others on the field and the opponent team and then contextualising that with other information like the score or the crowd, if we can do that. And one of the challenges that we've had, it's we've always known that there's been an effect of a crowd, but it's been super complex and difficult to measure and to quantify. And I suppose this is where Baden's project, our project, came into this. A totally different way of using the data that I've been categorising and putting into pots and and then comparing and contrasting. It's a whole new way of looking at what we've looked at for a fair while.
It's so interesting because this is stuff that I would have no clue about. I don't have any clue about sport. And so the machinations of science behind our, you know, prestigious kind of athletes is just something that I wouldn't have any conception of whatsoever. So how did you guys get together and how did you even meet each other to start this kind of work?
So it's actually the UTS Art Gallery that put us in touch. So Tanya Creighton, who's the curator at UTS Art, suggested this sign-up residencies, which is run through the Australian Network for Art and Technology, ANNET, down in Adelaide. And they've been running these residencies for a long time now, and they're in their 30th anniversary year this year. So it's been happening for a little while, and Tanya suggested that we work together, essentially, and I'm not a huge sports fan, actually, which is interesting. But, you know, I'm interested in sport as, I guess, an aesthetic, cultural kind of political system, of course. But sport is, you know, it's a really aesthetic, emotional thing. You know, people go to stadiums and they experience a really kind of like a really performative space where they're allowed to express emotions in a way that they aren't usually. So it seemed like a kind of fairly obvious thing in a way to try and like quantify that using some quasi kind of pseudoscience methods, I guess, from my end at least.
Yeah, from my end, it wasn't so obvious, but I thought, what's the risk, right? And so, and
you
like,
had no idea.
And I had no idea for us. I probably still have no idea, but it's been a really valuable project for me. Totally changed my perspective, and I'd recommend it to anybody to do this because it's a different way of looking at really complex problems.
Yeah, it's kind of really amazing how these different data sets yield totally different results depending on the perspective of the person implementing them. And so when these things come together, it creates this wonderful kind of alchemy between art and science. Now, as a sports illiterate, I would like to ask maybe Aaron to describe what a clangor is in AFL lexicons.
Fundamentally, it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. It's a turnover. So you go to kick the ball to someone and you miss it, you turn it over, kick it to the other person, the other team. So a clangor is a turnover or an error. It's a really emotive term, actually, when you think about it. It usually brings fear into the person who's created it, and the coach is not so happy when they hear the word clangor. So.
And the scorn from the crowd, I guess, that watch this happen.
You get a reaction.
It's such a great sounding word as well.
Yes.
But I think it was coined by Champions Arter.
Correct, yeah.
Who counts everything at the AFL. And it's because they count everything, they have to count things that really can't be counted, like that aren't an actual handball or a disposal or a kick or a goal, whatever it is. Mm. And that I saw was a really nice kind of pivot, I guess, between the two of us. You know, I'm looking at the clangor because that's where the mistakes are, where the system falls apart. That's where naturally you like to look as an artist.
So I'm really interested in how you were measuring crowd reaction and how you were gathering this data in particular as
so
well.
So essentially we weren't gathering any data, it's gathered already.
Yep.
So we were just getting access. Well, I was getting access. Aaron kind of has access already as a privileged
I'm lucky to get access to some of it.
The sporting elite. So really everything's recorded like everywhere else these days. But of course, you know, the AFL is a image and sound business, basically. Mm. It broadcasts the matches and that's how it makes its money.
Mm.
Basically, it's all sitting there, and I wanted to use the audio of the crowd. You know, the original premise of the project was to try and determine what influence the crowd has on players. And so the audio data matches the GPS data pretty well. Like audio data is just, you know, it's waves basically.
Yeah.
So you can turn that into ones and zeros. With GPS data, obviously you've got location, which is longitude and latitude. And then to create a 3D space of that, you just need another variable. So it could be speed or it could be sound. And creating an object from the audio of the crowd as well as player data essentially creates an object of the game.
So we're just watching a video that is part of the installation Clangor. And this one, can you describe what we're seeing?
So we're essentially seeing a shape that it's a result of mixing player data and crowd data together and creating a 3D object from that.
Mm.
And it's really a kind of very organic, kind of visceral.
It's very fleshy.
Very fleshy, very organic kind of shape that, in a sense, my role as an artist in this creating this shape was really just to kind of like usher it out of the data rather than modeling it per se. So it was basically a kind of a freak thing that this... this data sculpture represents something that is so guttural and visceral and, you know, yeah, it was totally surprising, but not surprising in a sense as well. Like knowing the root of the data being, you know, it's very fleshy data from bodies, it's from voices. Mm. So,
and moving bodies.
Yeah, that's right.
And how do you, looking at this, how do you interpret it, Aaron?
This was one problem that Baden came to us with, maybe the impact of the crowd on performance. And I always looked at it as an objective higher or lower thing rather than as a visceral emotive thing. It's a totally different way. And I've been deducing data, reducing it down to, you know, yes or no, higher or lower. It's just a totally different way of looking at what I've looked at for, you know, 15, 20 years, brings emotion as well too, which is really, really unusual for a start. So there's many problems around player, you could use this data around how players are feeling, you know, their emotions, that they could draw around a lot of things, how coaches, they get the interaction of coaches around this. Because these are really complex multidimensional systems that, well, the way I handle data at least, there's probably some computer scientists who do a better job than I, but it's gone beyond my capabilities of answering some of these problems and bringing the emotions into understanding the problems. I'm not sure we're solving problems, but we're definitely understanding them from a totally different perspective, and I think that's the value in it for me.
It's interesting though as well, because a lot of the big data stuff that's happening now with Google, Facebook, etc., is around sentiment analysis, which is exactly, you know, this idea of trying to glean emotion from data. You know, how is Nike doing now that they've, you know, released this controversial ad campaign? All that kind of stuff is super valuable information, and it often ties into sports. So the, you know, there's probably a lot of, and it's only one form of data as well. There's a lot of other data that gets collected.
Biological, take
blood tests, psych tests. You know, how you feeling today? Like before training, how you feeling today? Do you sleep well? Blood prick, urine tests.
It's just an incredible form of like really focused human surveillance, I guess. And I guess that's you know, on the level of art practice and looking at what that kind of means as a to sort of be looking at these people in terms of their energy and their power and
productive units.
And being productive, human units, and what happens when they stop.
You know, a lot of the time we're doing stuff before understanding what the implications are. You know, in terms of, you know, there's a huge area of personalized health growing, and like elite athletes are one category of people that are really closely tracked. And often, just like, you know, military has been an incubator for certain kinds of technologies and practices, I think elite sports and other kinds of elite domains of professional practice also become these kind of new incubators of, you know, innovation and technologies that we don't necessarily understand implications of.
Yeah, I'd support that totally. You know, we took a long time of having data before we really knew what some of it meant. We still don't know what it all means, and so we've got to be really careful on, you know, making hard decisions on these things. They just give us some insights.
And so are you both working together on any more projects, do you think, in the future? I see this as quite a fruitful and friendly and productive relationship.
Oh, it's been fun.
We're going steady now.
Yeah, we're going well. I suppose it depends on funding, but I'd be absolutely very keen to pursue this. As I said at the start, it's changed my perspective in a way, and I actually recommend young scientists undertake some collaborations like this because it just changes the way you look at problems and gives you a whole different appreciation.
I mean, it's certainly, for me, it's opened up this entire aspect of sport that I just had zero understanding of. And it does actually lend a whole other kind of layer for me of empathy for these players and their surveilled bodies as well, which is something that I, you know, haven't really held either. Thank you so much both for coming tonight and talking to us for the Constellations. It's been really great to talk through a whole bunch of things that I have no idea or had no idea about. Now I'm quite well informed.
I still have no idea.
I still have no idea about sport, but I'm going to get there with the women's AFL, I tell you that.
I know what I know less about now. So.
So if you would like more information about this project and the work of our fantastic speakers tonight, please go to our website for the links at deluxe.org.au. And if you'd like to be part of the audience for our next episode of The Constellations, check out the Deluxe Facebook page. The Constellations is a podcast program on experimental art, produced by Deluxe Media Arts and Canvas, Art and Ideas on FBI Radio. This project is supported by the New South Wales Government through Create New South Wales, the City of Sydney, and 107.